This too is my first time participating in this forum, not sure if Rabbi Coleman himself knew how this would evolve. I told him that I have given lectures back in the community in Lower Merion. We did have throughout the summers, the past few years, we've had in the afternoon what we call a business ethics shiur, business ethics class. Larry has attended many of them, and it's really to discuss a topic, a question, a case, usually dealing with some legal issue, something that has legal aspects and repercussions to it, and looking at it from the standpoint of Talmudic law. At times, Talmudic law and legal law do have a clash. At times they're in agreement, and at times one of them is not so clear. And if this will be accredited to CLE, so then even if the class is not so good, nonetheless the food certainly was good and you get your credit. If this is purely for the sake of an enjoyment of a Torah discussion, that's wonderful. We're able to share some Torah topic on this holiday of Hanukkah. And a happy Hanukkah to all. So let's start with the question. And the question is actually was a real life case. It was a doctor on call. His beeper goes off. He has to rush to the hospital. And he runs down to the parking garage where he lives, and lo and behold, he gets into his car and he sees that the person who parked next to him either was in a rush to park his car or her car, or careless, and parked so close to his car that if he would try to go out with his own car, he would knock off the side mirror of the car next to him. At this point, the doctor does not have any time to waste. He can't find out. Let me go see who the license plate is. Let me see. There's only a finite amount of people in the building. I could probably go door to door to find out. Can't really do that. That's not feasible. Must be on his way. And therefore, goes out and indeed knocks off the side mirror of the car parked next to him. And the question is this doctor obligated to pay for the damage that he has done to this person's car? It's not so cheap to fix a side mirror. I know from experience. So who has to pay for that? Is the doctor obligated to pay? Is he liable for the damage that he incurred? Now we know every person, certainly in Jewish law, every person is responsible for their actions. They're responsible even to a great degree, even if it was really unintentional. Unintentional damage, but a person is always obligated, he's always liable for things that he does. That's how we view it. For those that have some familiarity with the Talmud, you know there's a case about one person's ox goring another person's ox, so you think, oh, well, this is a car, well, that's just a modern day ox, and that is incorrect. That's incorrect because the ox of a person is just something of that he is an owner on. There's monetary obligations to him of whatever he owns. When a person is behind the steering wheel, and a person is driving a car, it's as if he himself is damaging. In the terminology of the Gemara, it's not momon hamazik, it's not monetary damage, but it's adam hamazik. It's a person creating damage or inflicting damage in someone, and therefore that's how it's viewed. Obviously, you're not going to make the car liable, and therefore it's the person driving the car, and since the person is controlling the car, he is the one that's liable for any damage that's occurred, again, be it intentional or unintentional, be it careless or not. Now, one part of this discussion could lead to what I remember as a young child. If you're walking on the street and you see someone collapse, and people are screaming, persons are The person just fainted. Does anybody know CPR? And I remember hearing the story as a child that if a novice tries to perform CPR on someone, okay, not someone in the medical field will try to perform CPR because they took a course once as a teenager for the Boy Scouts that they know how to do CPR and they do it, it's very likely that they will break a rib or several ribs, depending on the frailty of the victim. And they will break some ribs in the course of resuscitating this person. It's perhaps saving the person's life. It's very likely, again, that the unskilled saving person here will crack some ribs on that person. Can that person whose life was just saved turn around now and sue the person who cracked his ribs? And it struck me, why would anybody want to do that? I mean, his life was just saved. Why would anybody want to do that? Except if you look, there was a case 4 years ago in California. There were several college-age students, friends, who had a bit to drink. They had other things too. It was discovered afterward. And they were at a party Halloween Eve. And they drove out in two cars, and the first car lost control, slammed into a pole, and the victims were trapped in that car. The car behind them, driven by another friend of theirs, saw what happened, stopped, and saw that her friend was trapped in the car, and therefore yanked out her friend because the car was then on smoke. She feared that the car would explode, and in order to save her friend's life, yanked out her friend. This victim who was yanked out of the car remained paralyzed after that accident. Unclear when that occurred, when the paralyzation occurred, but after a number of weeks, this woman, Miss Van Horn, sued her friend Miss Torti for causing her to be paralyzed. Before they went to court, the savior, this young woman, Miss Torti, wanted to be absolved from even going to court based on the Good Samaritan law. If I'm going to save someone's life, I'm protected by the Good Samaritan law that I can't be sued in attempting to save someone. And it went to the Supreme Court of California, and they ruled that she is not protected by such a law. And what's the rationale for that? And it was the debate back and forth. And the rationale was because the Good Samaritan law is only in cases of emergency. And this wasn't a case of emergency. Apparently, it came out afterwards, really, the smoking car did not explode. And even though her intentions were good, she was trying to save her friend's life. Nonetheless, this was not a medical emergency. And therefore, there's no absolvement of liability in this case. That was the case. And of course the debate went back and forth. Well, you're right, we do have to make guidelines to the Good Samaritan law, because otherwise you're leaving the possibility of things worse happening in a case of an accident, or a case of someone who's trying to save his friend, and they could damage the person even worse. Perhaps that's what happened in this case. The other side of the coin is that once you put people in this predicament that, you know, it's very possible that I could come out on the losing end over here. It's very possible that if I try to help, if I'm trying to assist over here, I could actually get sued. And that would be a deterrent for people, obviously, for trying to help people in distress, trying to help people in need. We can also ask, if there is some sort of amnesty for a person in an attempt to save someone, an attempt to help someone in need, and if there would be under the Good Samaritan law, we know is for regular people of civilization, you know, the regular civilians, not medical personnel. And could we say that the law should be different for medical personnel? Do medical personnel have to have a different standard, and they're always exempt? Okay, there was a case in Florida of a a young ambulance driver speeding to an accident with lights and sirens, and in trying to avoid hitting another car, turned into the other lane, collided with another car, and it ended up in a fatality of the person in the other car. And the ambulance driver went away with a citation. Nothing more than that. So it seems like, now it could be in different states there are different laws. And in the way it works in the legal system of the world, indeed each state has to develop the law in the way they see fit. So let's try to discuss it again from the Talmudical standpoint. What would Jewish law say about these cases? What would Jewish law say about the case that we started with? The case we opened up with, the doctor is on call. He's paged to come immediately to the hospital. And in doing so, he has to. There's no other choice. But he has to damage the car that was parked next to him. And would it be different if he didn't have to damage the car, but in his haste to get out, in his haste to go attend the person in the hospital, he indeed was careless and therefore damaged the car next to him? Would he have to pay for the damage in that case? Would it be any different? So far clear? No questions. Okay? The answer? Any answers yet?
That's
a safe answer, always. Depends who you go like, you know. You go like the Rambam, you're okay. Yeah, it depends. All right, let's give a little more information, and then we'll see where it takes us. There is a case brought in the Talmud, not of a doctor, but of a person walking in a public thoroughfare. A street which is meant for people to walk on. It's not a private, not private property. And if two people are walking on the street, and then one begins to run. One is walking, and then one is running. And the one running knocks over the one walking. Okay, and you can name it whatever damage is, because in Talmudic law and Torah law, there's no difference if he rips the person's pants and the damage is only $50, or he injures the person and the damage could be $5,000. It's still the same. By Torah law, we want to know who's obligated to pay, and if he's liable to pay, he has to pay for any of the damages. So what happens if a person is running? The Talmud says if one is running and one is walking, then the person running must pay for any damages. If they're both walking, and then once one bumps into the other, it seemed they would be exempt from paying. If both are running, also they'll be exempt to pay. Now, we can understand that if it's a busy train station, people are hustling and bustling, and people are running and trying to catch trains. So everybody knows you have to be on your guard. You have to be careful. There are going to be people who are in a big rush, and you have to be vigilant to know you may have to dodge people who are running for their train. But if a person's walking in a place where it's meant to walk and someone else is running, that's the rationale why the person running, since he is going beyond what is the norm in that place, since he is being different than what's the norm in that place, therefore he's liable for any damages that occurs because of his actions. The Mishnah, the Talmud here, discusses one case where there is an exception. And the exception case is if it is Friday afternoon and the person is running because of Shabbos needs. Unclear. The Talmud doesn't say exactly, was he going to buy flowers for his wife? Was he going to make sure that the chalent was, but doesn't say exactly what, but it's Shabbos needs. In other words, it's the eve of Shabbos, entering the eve of Shabbos. It's Friday afternoon, late Friday afternoon. As the Talmud tells us, it's the twilight period. And this person is rushing for Shabbos needs. In that case, even though he's rushing in a place where people are just walking. In that case, he is exempt. And again, in that case, the Talmud says that damages that occur because of that person, he does not have to pay for those damages. He's not liable for that case. Now, it does have to be Shabbos needs, obviously, just not because it's not a free-for-all. Well, let me see. Ah, I see it's entering the sunset time of Friday afternoon, so I'll decide to go for my jog now. I won't have to worry about hitting anybody because this is a special time. It's a free, no, that can't be the case, but it has to be that one is running because of his Shabbos needs. Either it means he's running to buy things for Shabbos, or it means that he is running to get home in time, so therefore he, when Shabbos enters in, he is prepared and ready for Shabbos. Okay. Now, we'll have to discuss this. Is only for Shabbos? Does it go for, is there now a new religious exemption? Right? You know, I was running because I had to, I was running to the CLE class, which was Talmudic law. That's a religious exemption. Well, it depends. If you paid for the CLE, maybe not. So, is this automatically an exemption for any religious needs? Or is this only something that pertains to Shabbos? We could also analyze this Talmudic passage, as is the way for those familiar with the study of Talmud, the study of Gemara. That's what we do. We're given sometimes just statements, laws, sometimes cryptic statements, and we have to analyze it and develop it through many of the commentaries, in the dozens of commentaries over the last 1500 years, essentially, discussing the cases, developing it, and how they understand it, and seeing it through the lenses of the commentators, and seeing how we understand this case to its fullest, to what extent it applies, and certainly in which cases it applies. So we'll put two possibilities on the table. Why would a person running on Friday, late Friday afternoon, why would he be exempt from any damages that occurs, as opposed to when he's running on Monday afternoon, late in the day? So the sun is setting and he's running, it's Monday afternoon, and he decides he wants to go for a little run. And he bangs into somebody, he knocks him over. An injury occurs, and there he has to pay. But if it's Friday afternoon, he doesn't. So what's the reason for that? What's the rationale for that exemption?
Either everybody should be rushing because it's Shabbos and we should all be rushing, and therefore the one who was walking was the one who was out of step with what the community is supposed to do, or one should make haste to fulfill a mitzvah, and that's what he was doing.
Okay. Let me adjust your two lines of reasoning. Because do we say everybody has to rush for Shabbos? I know that Shabbos happens to be on my calendar. It says that Shabbos comes every week, so I know every Friday. Yes, sunset gets earlier and later, but I know I have to. So maybe Thursday afternoon I prepare everything, so I go very calmly into Shabbos, and therefore I'm just walking calmly to do my business. And this person is running because he procrastinated. But is the reason, as you said, that Friday afternoon is a time where people are rushing? Okay? And let's assume, you know, we gave a case of a train station. Everybody knows in a train station there will be people rushing. Okay? Now let's just take a small Jewish community, and everybody knows people are going to be rushing. Okay? People on foot, people driving cars. People are going to be rushing, and therefore the potential victim has to be on guard to look out for these people. So therefore, even though this is normally used, this thoroughfare is normally used, this street, for walking, but I have to know that if a person is running and is rushing, sort of out of the norm, but I have to be aware of that because it's the time of week that it is, late Friday afternoon. And that's saying that we say that it's on the potential victim. He himself has to be careful, and therefore if something does happen, he should have been more careful. The other way of understanding it is that maybe it's just an exemption for performance of mitzvahs, because the Torah is concerned that everybody should enter into Shabbos on time, and they know that we're going to always have to do last-minute preparations, so maybe we gave a special exemption for those that are rushing to do this mitzvah, to enter into Shabbos on time. Maybe that's the exemption. There's no fault of the victim himself, but nonetheless, there is an exemption. Let's think of the following analogy. We gave a case of an ambulance in Florida that was rushing to the scene of an accident or to a patient and was in an accident itself. And it seemed that the law over there was not liable for the fatality that occurred. Now, what's the reason for that? Let's say we have a police car rushing with lights and sirens, and causes damage. Well, if we say, because everybody knows, whether you're in a vehicle or whether you're walking, everybody knows that you have to stay away from medical or police vehicles, especially when they have the lights and sirens, I know I have to watch out for that. Now, if that was the case, what if the police was, with lights and sirens, rushing to get to a Dunkin' Donuts? There was actually no emergency. Now, I don't know that, but the officer knows. Once he puts those lights and sirens, everybody stay away. That says that the police now is exempt of anything happens because it's upon the potential victim to watch out for his own life. Well, that, if that would be the rationale, then even if he was rushing to the Dunkin' Donuts before it closes, they're up 24 hours, I think. Not a good example. So then they still would be exempt because we say, oh, you have to stay away. That's what it would be. On the other side, we could say, though, that's good and well if the police car struck a pedestrian. What happens if the police car struck a parked car? You don't say the parked car should have moved out of the way because the police had his lights and sirens. So if that would be the only rationale, that they have to move out of the way, so then it's only when there's a person involved that knows to move out of the way. And again, back to our case of the person rushing for Shabbos, if it's because the potential victim has to be vigilant and watch out for those that are rushing, well, what happens if the person rushing for Shabbos, driving his car, and bangs into a parked car? Again, that parked car couldn't watch out. So that would be, if we understand that the exemption here is because the victims have to move out of the way. And I think that we would have the ramifications would be varied based on that principle. If we say the second principle, that the idea is that the Torah or the rabbis perhaps gave a special exemption. Those rushing to do a mitzvah, those rushing to make sure they don't desecrate the Shabbos when Shabbos comes in, we gave them a special exemption. Which then we can understand also that the law says that medical personnel, police, fire, ambulance, they too, we gave a special exemption. And if damage is incurred by what they do, we will say they're exempt. They don't have to pay for the damages. Let's keep that case in mind. Let's keep the case of the person rushing for Shabbos. And again, we had two possibilities of understanding it. Either it's because the potential victim has to really be on his own guard, or it's because there's a special exemption. And we have to see to what extent is this special example of rushing to do a mitzvah. Is it any mitzvah? Okay, or is it only because it's Shabbos? Is Shabbos so special? There was an example. Once a month we go out to bless the new moon. Okay? It's a custom that only men who are in shul at the time go out, and when the moon is visible in the beginning of the month, within the first about week and a half of the month, we go and say a special prayer to the moon. Well, what happens if somebody's in shul and the gabbai of the shul gives a clap and says, Kiddush Levana, time to bless the new moon. So this person, in his haste to go rush, grabs a siddur and rushes out the front door, only to knock over a small child waiting in the lobby of the shul. Well, does he say, well, you can't give me the bill for the doctor because I was rushing to do this mitzvah. Would we say that as well? And as how far do we extend this sort of this religious amnesty to people who are involved in doing a mitzvah? That also we have to come to some conclusion on that. So far, okay? Any questions before we go further?
I have an irrelevant question.
All right, we'll see if we have time for that.
Kaddish to Lavona, you know, blessing to the moon. What is that, every month?
Correct.
Every new moon. Thank you.
Correct.
I said it was irrelevant.
That example, though, supports both sides of the argument because you could say that we should know that on a new moon, you could find people rushing out of the shul.
Right.
So therefore, you should be
correct. Right. So if it will be that, so then it would depend. That's if they injure a person who could have watched out, if could have been watching out. Yeah, that would be true on that side of the coin. But the case over there was actually, this happened a few hundred years ago. Someone on his way out trampled on somebody's utensils that were laying on the street, and he was rushing out. So he wouldn't have that exemption. Well, if it was the second exemption, that on the way to do a mitzvah, some involved in religious pursuit, somehow we have this exemption. Yes, ma'am.
Is it a time-bound mitzvah? Is it when a person becomes aware of the new moon?
Oh, in terms of that?
Yeah, or at a particular time, just like when Shabbos comes in.
No, it's within a range of about 7 days. That means there has to be the time when the moon is then seen at a certain it waxes and wanes. So when it is seen at a certain fullness, one can bless the new moon. But once it has come to its full moon, then it's too late already. Then it's not in its newness anymore, so one can't bless the moon. So anyway, within that time frame. So if your question is, well, you didn't have to go tonight to bless the moon, you could have done it tomorrow night. And he'll tell you, well, they predicted cloudiness and then it's going to rain. And, you know, there have been stories of, since it's only a mitzvah that occurs once a month, so people are very careful. They want to be able to perform this mitzvah. Now, what happens if you have it's just a very cloudy month. It could happen during the winter and it's raining and then it's snowing. And one night goes by, another night, and you can't see the moon. It's just not visible. So there have been stories of people actually traveling many miles to get to a place. You know, if they only had this is the last night to be able to say this blessing, they would travel many miles to be able to be in an area where the moon could be visible. Okay, but yes, there is a certain amount of time to say it. So let's go to a new case, another case in a different tractate Sanhedrin, where the Gemara discusses, the Talmud discusses the following example, the following case. A person is sitting, let us say, on a park bench, minding his own business, taking in the scenery, and all of a sudden he sees before his eyes a chase. Someone is running, screaming for his life, and there's someone pursuing him, clearly wanting to hurt him or kill him. The person, let's say, has a weapon in his hand and he's chasing this other person. Okay? So if that is the case over here, okay, they're not shooting a movie and then for the you get involved. You understand this is someone's life is in danger. So the person sitting on the bench is obligated to try to save the victim. In his pursuit to try to stop the pursuer to save the victim, what happens if he damages something or someone on the way to chase down this pursuer? And in his way, in his attempt to stop this potential murderer, he damages something. Okay, what if he has to get onto his bike, he got onto his motorcycle and try to chase the person down, and he knocks somebody over, or he knocks something over. Does he have to pay for those damages or not? Now, I don't know legally if he has to pay for those for the damages incurred, if he's liable for that. But the Talmud tells us a very interesting statement about this. The Talmud says that if damages were incurred by, we'll call this guy the savior, while he's trying to chase down the pursuer, if damages incurred, he is exempt from paying. But says the Talmud, but not because that's really the letter of the law, but it's a special exemption, because if we don't exempt him, then the guy sitting on the park bench will think twice or three times before he gets up and tried to save somebody. Or maybe he won't do it at all. And this rationale given by the Talmud is exactly that with the discussion that we, when we mentioned this case in California with the Good Samaritan law, because that's essentially what this is. This is a civilian trying to perform a good deed, trying to save somebody, and in his attempt to save somebody, could he actually be sued for damages that he incurred? Could he be sued by just a passerby? Could he be sued even by the victim himself or herself? As in this case in California, where the victim herself sued her friend that was trying to save. So the Talmud, in recognizing this, the Talmud says the person is exempt for any damages that incur because of his trying to save. It's an exemption. Not because that's really the letter of the law, but we have to do so because otherwise people will not be so quick to try to save people in need and distress. Now, let's ask the following question. In this case, the person is sitting on the park bench, but gets up and starts running, and in his haste to track down the pursuer, damages someone, knocks somebody over. His running, was he running with permission? Was he allowed to be running over there? In other words, this is, let's say, a park where just people walk. Okay? But, and therefore he's sort of being out of the norm. He's doing something that's abnormal for this place right now and at this time. But nonetheless, we had a case before that a person running on late Friday afternoon, even though he's running and everybody else is walking, we said he's exempt from any damage that is occurred by his running. Why in this case would the person not be exempt if presumably he is running with sort of permission? We grant him permission, we actually obligate him to try to save the person, the potential victim over here. So why won't we just say, well, since he was running with sort of with our permission, with the permission granted him to go save someone, why isn't he exempt just because of that? And this statement in the Talmud is that really he would be liable to pay for damages, but we have to get him off the hook for other reasons. We have to sort of override this law because of the need to have people help out people in distress. Do we understand the question here? Question on the table? Okay, a person in an attempt to saving somebody damages somebody's property, damages someone's item, and we say really he would have to pay for it, but we will exempt him for other reasons, as we explained. So why is that any different than running late Friday afternoon? We say there, the law says you're exempt. So obviously we now have to analyze this properly. What is the exemption? Someone running on Friday, late Friday afternoon, what indeed is the exemption by the strict letter of the law of why he is not liable for any damages that he causes in his haste to buy the things he needs for Shabbos, in his haste to get home in time for Shabbos? Why is he exempted from any damages that he causes? So we gave two possibilities. Possibility number one is that because since it's a time when people know that there are people rushing, so therefore they know they have to watch out. They know they have to be on guard to make sure that they are cognizant of everything that's happening around them, because people may be rushing at this time. That's why the law says this exemption is limited and is specific to Friday afternoon late in the day. Because that's the time when I know that people are going to be rushing, and therefore I have to be on guard to make sure that nothing happens to me. It doesn't go by any other mitzvah. A person, there's no special religious exemption because a person was involved in the pursuit of performing a mitzvah. It doesn't work like that. And that's why by the case of Kiddush Levana, well, you could argue that people also know then that people are rushing out, but it seems that even with this line of reasoning, and there's even reasoning number one, that it's the obligation to be careful is on those passerbys, those innocent bystanders, they have to watch out. It's only because they know at that time people are going to be rushing. Now, the person taking a nice stroll in the park, does he know that someone's going to be rushing in the park? He has no idea. So you can't expect him to watch out for people who may be running out of the norm in the park to go save somebody. He had no idea he has to be watch out for that. And therefore, that's we understand the Talmud saying that the person running is liable for the damages from the strict letter of the law. However, if it's in pursuit to save somebody's life, we give a special exemption. That's what the Gemara says. V'leimin hadin. This is not really the law, but if we don't make this the law, you know, this, if we don't say that people will not be liable for damages they cause while trying to save a person, then no one will want to save people. In the case of the person who just fainted on the floor, and if I have to think twice, you know, if I do CPR on this person, and then the person can turn around and sue me for any damages that I cause, I may think twice or three times before I try to save this person. So therefore we said, in order that that shouldn't happen, we said anyone in the involvement to save a person's life is automatically exempt. That's why, if the person trying to save a person, okay, trying to perform the CPR, even does something that would seem not necessary for the life saving of this person, okay, person didn't know how much time he has, so he took the person's shirt and ripped the shirt open in order to be able to perform CPR, to be able to see the rib cage. Does he have to pay for the shirt that he just ripped? That wasn't part of saving the person's life. Maybe cracking a rib or two is part of the same. So with this understanding, we say this exemption is across the board. Not by the strict letter of the law, because this wasn't needed to save the person's life. But nonetheless, the person is exempt, because if we don't say, then again, the person will think twice, or perhaps act much slower to try to save a person's life. So this first understanding, that the idea behind the law on Friday afternoon, late Friday afternoon, is because the other people walking in the street at that time, they are obligated to be vigilant about their surroundings. That's the opinion of, if you like a name, it's the Or Sameach. Rabbi Meir Simcha of Divinsk passed away about close to 80 years ago. And that's his opinion of the case in the first Talmudic case of the person running on late Friday afternoon. Is a second opinion. And that is the opinion of an 18th century scholar, the Chavis Yor, Rabbi Yor Bachrach. And Rabbi Yor Bachrach suggests that the reason why a person running late on Friday afternoon, the reason why, if he causes damage to somebody, he doesn't have to pay, he's not liable for those damages that he causes, is not because everybody else has to watch out, but rather because you have to look at what the Talmud is discussing over here. The Talmud's case is it's late Friday afternoon. That means it's already the sunset period. It's twilight period. Now, you're talking about the times of the Talmud, they didn't just have street lights that go on automatically. Therefore, he explains that the reason why we exempt this person is because the time of day that it is and the visibility in the streets at that time are such that we can't blame a person, and we can't expect a person who's rushing to get on time for Shabbos, or rushing to buy things for his Shabbos needs. We can't expect him to be able to be as careful as he is any other time of the day, any other time of the week. Because that's a time where we know you have to rush. That's a time we allow you to rush. And the only reason we exempt the person from any damages is only because it's twilight and it's partially dark, and therefore he can't really see, and that's why we exempt him from any damages that he does. If that was the case, so then we could argue that the person sitting on the park bench and sees a chase going on and gets up to try to save this potential victim and tries to chase the pursuer over here, perhaps he is very aware of his surroundings. Perhaps if there's a damage that occurs because he damaged something and he didn't have to do so, and as he was careless, perhaps there would be no exemption over there. He could see, it's clear daylight, he could see his surroundings, he could see what he's doing, and therefore we say, really, you would be obligated to pay for any damages, even though you were doing a good deed. Indeed, you were doing the right thing. You were doing the thing you had to do. But nonetheless, a person is always obligated and is always liable for his actions and the damage that occurred because of him. And therefore, really, from the strict letter of the law, he would be obligated to pay. But the rabbi said, if we don't, in cases of people trying to save another person's life, if we don't exempt them from damages, they're not going to want to do that. In other words, in the case in California, when there was when the friend was pinned in her car, and the other friend, seeing that the car is smoking and fearing that the car would just explode, and in her attempt to save her friend's life, it would seem that the Talmud would say, even though she was wrong, even though it was not necessary to yank her friend out, and perhaps she did cause to her friend to be paralyzed, we would say perhaps the strict letter of the law would say you're obligated to pay for that. But nonetheless, we have to give this special amnesty, we have to give this special exemption for people involved in saving people's lives. Otherwise, they wouldn't want to do so. Let's go back to our original case. There's a doctor on call, and his pager goes off. He has to rush to the hospital, and he sees that in order for him to drive his car out, he's going to have to damage the car parked next to him. So based on our entire discussion over here, he knows good and well what he's doing. He knows he's going to have to knock the mirror off, but there's no time to waste. Is he going to have to pay for that damaged mirror or not? What would we say based on this entire discussion?
He should be exempt.
Should he be exempt by the strict letter of the law or by the special exemption that we're giving anyone involved in trying to save a person's life?
Exemption.
By the special exemption. Now, obviously, if it's something that he couldn't, if it's something that it was not because of his carelessness, but something that he really could not have prevented, if it's something he could not have prevented, then it could be even the letter of the law would exempt him. But if it's something just in his haste to get out, he didn't see if he has enough room and just sped out to get to the hospital to the emergency that was calling him, we would say you're exempt based on the special exemption because you were involved in saving a person's life. One can argue, before we conclude, that if the whole exemption, this is just a, we'll throw out a point to ponder, that if the whole exemption is that the rabbis were concerned that if we don't exempt people from being involved in saving people's lives, so we're worried about the fella sitting on the park bench, we're worried about a person who sees someone fainting and he can perform CPR on him, but he doesn't have any medical experience and therefore maybe he could be sued, he doesn't have malpractice insurance to protect him. So if that was the concern, then maybe this whole exemption should not apply to medical personnel. We're only worried that people will not want to be involved in saving people's lives. The doctor is obligated. Once he has his degree, once he has his license, he's obligated to save people's lives. He can't say, you know what, I'm too tired now. And that's the law. If there's a doctor that passes the scene of an accident, and there's someone on the floor that needs medical attention, I, as a civilian, can't be sued if I don't stop. But someone in the medical field, a doctor or nurse, indeed can be sued if he or she doesn't stop to save the person. So maybe this special injunction that the rabbis gave in order to make sure people do go and save lives, because if they know they'll be sued, so they may not be too hasty to go save someone's life, maybe that wouldn't even apply to medical personnel. That's a question we could think about. So, in conclusion, we see that this case that the Talmud told us about, a person late Friday afternoon rushing to get home in time for Shabbos or to get to his Shabbos preparations, we explained that it's very limited. It's limited to a time where either people are rushing at that time and therefore others know to watch out, or B, since he's rushing to get home in time for Shabbos, and it is at a time that we can't expect the person to be so careful because of the time of day and the lack of light that is at that time of day, that's the special exemption. However, we find that the Beis Yosef writes in his code of Jewish law that someone rushing to do to a mitzvah does not have this special exemption, and indeed would still be liable for damages that he incurs. There is an interesting Mishnah. The Talmud in Masechta Baba Kama talks about a case about the person who was lighting his Hanukkah candles. He lit his menorah. We know in Talmudic times, and in some places in the world they still do this, in Talmudic times they used to light the menorah outside. So you have a fellow who lights his menorah outside and his candles are burning. And what happens if somebody passes by? Either he and his coat catches on to fire, or passes by, the Talmud's case is that he has a camel laden with goods and the goods catch on fire and are destroyed. Well, is the owner of that menorah, does he have to pay or not? And there's an opinion in the Mishnah, this is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that he's exempt. Why? Because it's Hanukkah, and we know you're allowed to light outside. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Now again, it could be Rabbi Yehuda's going with the first line of reasoning, and therefore everybody knows it's Hanukkah, you have to watch out. Or maybe the second line of reasoning, that since it's Hanukkah, I'm allowed to light my menorah, I'm doing so with permission, and therefore I'm exempt. However, the law doesn't follow the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. The law follows the other opinion. And the other opinion is that even when it's a menorah, and even though a person is indeed allowed to light his menorah outside, but he must sit and watch that menorah. So if any damages do occur, that's his own fault. He is liable for those damages. And here we see that it's only this special limitation of late Friday afternoon where a person is not expected to be as careful and as vigilant as a regular time. But the case of the menorah, we see a person certainly can sit by his candles for the time that they have to be lit, watch them and make sure they don't cause any damage. And that would really be a proof to this idea that we are explaining. Thank you very much for listening.
How did the California case come out with the mirror?
Which case?
The car mirror gets knocked off.
No, so that case was brought actually to a Jewish court. That wasn't with the mirror. That it wasn't in California. Daik is mir. And the rabbi ruled that he's exempt, because since he was on his way to get to the hospital to attend to what the emergency needed, he would be exempt. Yeah, the case of California, I don't know what happened with the suit. The Supreme Court ruled that the Good Samaritan law doesn't apply, and therefore could go to court.
Okay, well, thank our Lieberfeld for what I thought was a truly excellent presentation. I'm sure you feel the same way.